No, don't start recording yet.
Good.
Oh, crap.
What?
You didn't press record?
Green's not record, right?
That's really out of my pay grade.
People, Don did not prep, and I think there are a few more bullet points that we'll be discussing.
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Hey, welcome to the Bonus Miles, and this is what happens after we're done recording a show. And if you're wondering which show we're talking about, it was last week with Richard Kresser and Will Fortin, where we talked about what it's like to run in the front of the pack and the back of the pack. And some of the differences, we really enjoyed the conversation.
We started to record the after the podcast conversations that Don and I have enjoyed for 9 years. And we're starting to release these as bonus miles. This week is free, and we're shooting it out on our normal podcast channel. And if you want to hear all of the bonus miles, you can get those by becoming a Patreon supporter. Go to our webpage, click on the Support Us tab at the top, and you can subscribe and be a Patreon supporter. And make sure you get each week's bonus miles.
Hey, Scott, we actually have a few Patreon subscribers, and we really appreciate each one of them.
We really do. Thank you so much. And now listen to the bonus miles with Will and Richard. Yeah. So I have a couple questions for bonus miles. This is where we aren't as guarded. So the whole time I'm looking at Will and I'm thinking about the only thing I can think about, I didn't listen to one word we were talking about on the podcast. The only thing I was thinking about are these blinking shirts that you're wearing. What happens when that company that makes that shirt goes out of business? What are you going to do?
They're not making the shirts anymore. I bought every single one I could find, and we're down here at the end of the line. I've workshopped a couple different things. I've got one that I like well enough. I've worn it a number of times. But like, it's tough to get rid of something that's been part of your identity for that long, whether it's a shirt or, you know, when you have an injury running and you're like, oh, I got to take 6 months off, like that, you know, it's tough. And so there's an emotional beat there. I've had multiple friends offer to make quilts out of them. So I'll probably end up taking one of them up on that.
I like that. Now, you said you've kind of tried another shirt. Have you tried it outside, or is it just like inside the house, you know, doors closed? Is your wife even seen you in it?
I wish I could tell you it was an other shirt. I've got multiple that are like, I bought some shirts. They just sit in the closet. I try them for a day or two and I'm like, well, this isn't just quite, because you get too used to things, you know? And so I think that alone maybe should be the wake up that I got to move on.
So Richard, I've got to ask you, do you see some of these, I'm going to call them quirks. Mm-hmm. Well, quirks, but I really don't mean it in a negative way. Do you see any of these types of patterns on with his trail running, you know, his pack or his shoe that he collects, or just the rhythm and practices that he uses on a long race?
Is he a cartoon on the trail?
that is why Will is so much fun to sweet with. He is just a walking cartoon. Like, it's just about like so many things. I mean, like Will's an onion. You peel back one layer and you find another and you're like, no, that there's no way that's real. And the more you ask, be like, God, maybe he's not just pulling my leg about that. he is an interesting cat for sure. Love you, man.
So what's your occupation, Will?
So I'm a scientist. I'm a geophysicist. I work at Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory. It's Columbia University's Earth Science campus.
Okay, so Scotty's 5 times smarter than both of us put together.
No.
Before I ask my next question, I will tell you, Will, you've inspired me. I love the idea. If I didn't have to think about what I had to wear, which obviously I don't think about it, but if I just had to go to the closet and pull out the same thing, and I you've motivated me. So I'm gonna start thinking about that really, really closely. But here's my next question I had during the podcast that we didn't ask is, how buzzed did you get drinking all the beer?
So not very, actually. In Tahoe, I think we started with like 3 beers up the hill the first couple miles. And I think that's the peak of how far we got into it. But in Moab, the next year, there was one long, hot, road stretch where the only salvation was in a can. And that was, that was maybe a little more than Tahoe, but still, like, you know, not too deep.
So do you think that the beer is the ultimate trail food? I mean, there's lightly carbonated, packed with carbohydrates, and a little bit of a painkiller to boot. Do you think it's just like the perfect recipe for long distance?
I don't think any doctors are going to recommend it anytime soon. Definitely not prescribed, but sometimes things, yeah. I think it complements other food and nutrients well.
I think that you've really hit the spirit of long distance running and anything and everything in moderation. Pace, training regime, intensity, foods that you eat or a beer that you drink. If it's in moderation, it's safe. And if you overindulge, you're going to bonk, crash, or DNF.
We're still talking about 200 milers here, right?
Yeah, I don't know if my wife would call anything that I do in moderation.
Yeah, exactly.
I think she was not quite so happy about the number of beers during Moab and Tahoe. And I don't think she would have said that was moderation. But
well, I mean, the distance, you stretch things out over time.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think Will has that perspective with the evolution of the Earth and the time frame. I think he can stretch his mind around distance.
Once you start hanging out with geologists and start thinking like a geologist, it puts problems in perspective. You're like, you know, a couple years is not a big deal. A 6-month injury, not a big deal. You know, 200 miles. Oh, yeah, sure.
So I would love to run with you, Will, because I have run across different sedimentary layers of rock and different types of granite and different formations and thought, I'm so ignorant. I don't know where this stuff comes from. I don't know what it means. I really don't know. I should appreciate this. I wish I had someone to educate me along the way. Richard, you must have that benefit of learning tons of stuff, which takes your mind off the running. Because you start to learn things and your mind can't focus on a knee or a ankle or maybe just the fatigue. You get to learn things. So there's 4 questions in there. Take anyone you want or go on or let Scott ask a question.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was super fun, especially during Moab with all the canyons.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's, everything there is just laid out right before you. So going through it with Will and all the knowledge that he has made it even more fun.
Do you ever tell him, you say, enough, I've heard enough about this time and period and what existed during that time. Do you ever get that?
Oh no, there was enough time. I just let him ramble.
200 miles, Freeman. Richard could get a doctor degree from Will during that same amount of time. Hey, Will, do you carry a little rock hammer around and ever stop and go, ooh, I have to chip off that one and bring one of those home to my students?
No, I haven't done that, but I do sometimes when I get curious do the other geologist trick where you wet a rock and typically they'll just lick it. And so sometimes I've done that because imagine you have a sandstone. I see your confusion. Imagine you have a sandstone and there's all these different grains and you don't know, okay, how much of it is this mineral versus that mineral. The grains become clearer when wet. And so sometimes, you know, you don't want to spend your precious water in the desert, so you give the rock a lick. Geologists have unique tools, and it's fun to hang out with them.
You know, as you said that, the only thing that popped into my mind is that stop animation Christmas. I think it was the year without a Santa Claus with that Yukon guy that he would taste the rocks. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah.
You guys too young for that.
Yeah, too young, Scott. Come on.
Anyway.
Yeah. Wasn't he in Rudolph too? You know, always licking the
rocks. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about.
The silver and gold guy.
Yeah, all right. Hey, guys, I think this conversation was a lot of fun. I think it came,
I think it was
unique. I don't think it's been done, maybe for good reason, but I think that we get to talk a little bit about running up front and the interesting challenges and the difference between running in the back. I know that one of the toughest runs that I've ever been on was running with a back of the pack
me
on cutoff,
me.
On cutoff times, and the group I was running with was so close. It was a 100-mile race, down in San Diego. It was so close to not making it in that we actually sent somebody forward to see how much further it was so that we know how hard to push. You couldn't trust the GPS. We were that close. And we did that for several aid stations. And I've never run harder or had pushed more than running in the back trying to beat the clock.
Yeah, I think that's...
It's super stressful to be able to, to be able to do that.
I think that's true anytime you lose sort of your sense of agency and control. Once you're no longer on your own schedule, whether it's a deadline at work or, you know, running at a pace that's got a clock chasing you or something, things become more difficult when you put those stresses on. And part of why, you know, ultra running, I think, appeals to so many people, myself included, is you get to find out who you are under extreme stress. And when you add that extra layer where there's a control outside of yourself, like, that's a hard thing, but probably a good thing to learn about yourself.
We sent somebody forward to whistle to, if we could hear them, we'll get to that aid station. We'll whistle. If you hear the whistle, keep running. It really spoke to the drive of finality to make it to something that you can push beyond what you're willing to put out, as long as you know there's a finish for you or a destination or a location. And so, and then traveling as a team, we had like seven people, including pacers and runners. And we just didn't want to drop. We, you know, you'd sit yourself in the middle if you were really struggling. And so you wouldn't drop. And it was just a memorable team effort and triumphant because we all made it. And it was, it was good. We made it to the finish line and under cutoff, obviously, because they were finishers. It was just a great experience, but very memorably, very hard.
Did you come up with a team name or anything?
Yeah,
Crisis. No, I don't know. I didn't have a team name, okay. But if I did, I'd have a t-shirt with it and that's all I would wear.
Yeah. Good.
First off, congrats on being able to make it through that. Yeah. And second, that kind of goes into a point we had kind of touched on a little bit before when we were talking about the aid stations, but kind of like something that's important enough I'd like to nail a little bit more on is that, you know, from the for those runners who are chasing the cutoff and coming in, those are the racers who need the most help at the aid station.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about for our Council Bluff aid station being open 50 hours and how it's so easy to have that level of excitement for the first runner, the second runner, the third runner. Then the excitement kind of starts to stabilize. But by that last runner, you know, they're just getting almost kind of the bare scraps of the energy, help, and excitement from the aid station. And most importantly, the food too. Like, having operated a lot of aid stations and been the volunteer coordinator to pick them up, you know, once you know that, hey, the cutoff's at 2 o'clock, you know, a certain time before that, let's start packing stuff up so we can get out of here and putting food away. Those runners who are coming in last need the food too. And, you know, it's just like leaving them the scraps, you know, like out on the table, what you give to the raccoons, like that, like we saw that a few times kind of going through some of the aid stations at Tahoe and Moab, like being the last place runner. There's just nothing worse with getting in there, knowing that you got X number more miles and just having like scraps out there and be like, is the grill still open? And they're like, oh no, it's all packed up in the truck. And we're just like, oh my God, I got like another 20 mile section before I can get some hot food. And it's 37 degrees outside. It's just like, please keep it open.
So I think that's there's an interesting balance there, because as sweeps, we didn't have the expectation, because having seen every side of it, you need to keep that aid station open for the last runner. And I think for the large part, aid stations often do that, but keeping it open for the sweeps, you don't necessarily have to do that. And having run an aid station, I get why after that long, you want to close up and get home, you know? So it's frustrating at times, but as a sweep, that's kind of what you sign up for. I mean, you know, like you want the grill to be open, but like you kind of also get it.
Yeah, you're serving as an aid station, you're serving two things, right? The physical piece with the food, and then you're also serving the mental or emotional side with the support. And one of the things that would really be discouraging is seeing an aid station torn down, the tent in the back of the pickup truck. You need to see, for the emotional side, a full functioning aid station. Mm-hmm. You don't want to see, hey, the race is closing down and you're just coming through. That will defeat you. You can't show somebody that, because they get 5 miles down the thing. They're like, this race is over. I'm done. This is it.
They've given up on me, so I should give up on myself.
Yeah.
It's definitely a balancing act. You know, you have to pick up some of it, but yeah, try and keep what you can open and still be able to support them.
I was just going to say, you guys have motivated me not only to wear the same t-shirt, but also, you know, I think I want to go do that. I think I would have more fun going out and being a sweep than actually participating with a bib.
Scott, our race times qualify us very easy to be sweeps at any race.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It fits not only my mentality, but also my physicality.
Hey. Yeah, sweeping is always my favorite volunteer job to do at a race. It's a lot of fun.
And it helps out the race director so much, because how we leave that trail really qualifies for permits next year. If there's trash on the ground, if there's flags left or dragons left in a tree, that's going to be a no starter for the next year. And we need to preserve that race for the runners and race directors and for, you know, years to come.
Yeah. And as far as I know, we never got any complaints from the Forest Service through Candace or anything about leaving them out there. We did a really good job, to the point once at Moab, we had passed one along a road that was uphill, and it had to be, 100 yards back? And I think we stood there at the crest of the hill looking back at this one flag going like, should we both go? We can't send one. We'll both go.
That's teamwork. And I'll tell you, if I ever see a beer can along a trail, and I know you guys wouldn't throw one down, but I will think about what you guys did. Just seeing one will make me think, I wonder if that's like a Bigfoot footprint, you know? It'll be like, I wonder if this came from Will and Richard.
Were you guys drinking in cans, or did you go with the bottles?
Go cans. I say they go cans because they're lighter.
Yeah.
Yeah. For
safety.
Sure,
yeah. Don't want broken glass.
Ah, good point. Good point.
Yeah.
Well, but when we can get a nice bottle in an aid station.
Yep.
Hey guys, I do remember coming through an aid station the year that you guys did that, and in all the drop bags, it was this 12 pack of beer. I think it was MGD. Is that a beer? MDG or MGD? I saw that there, and I said, who has, because I thought it was hilarious, who has a 12-pack of beer here? And they go, oh, that's the sweep guys. I go, okay, I do remember that. Did you ever, it was a black 12-pack with gold letters, MGD. Could that have been you?
Yeah, it was
probably.
Yeah, that was for a lot of our aid stations, or not a lot, but there were definitely some aid stations where we didn't have other food items, we would just send a 12 pack of beer to that aid station. That was our drop bag. And it was MGD Miller Genuine Draft.
I'm remembering it right. That's good.
Yeah good memory.
Hey, so I am trying to remember back. I went out and crewed Don when he ran Bigfoot, and there was a guy that was doing the same thing you guys were doing. He was doing a sweep, and I can't remember. I wish I could remember his name, but he was a great guy. He would come through and he'd sit down in the aid station in one of the chairs and just relax, and then pop open a couple, had a two or three beers. And then he'd say, well, I guess I better get back out there. And then you'd go on, and I'd see him at the next aid station. I can't remember his name to save my life. But he was kind of a big mountain
2018?
It was 20. What's that, Will? What was it, Don?
I don't remember, but I'm not going to admit to it because I don't want you there after the sweep comes through waiting for me. I don't like that story.
Oh, no. You had already gone through.
I suspect it might have been Joel.
Yeah.
That sounds like Joel.
Anyway.
Yeah, our buddy Joel Gatt, he was one of that original 200-miler Triple Crowns in 2015. He operates a brewery, so he's definitely beer friendly. And he, when we swept Tahoe, he went out pretty quick, had a little blow up, and unfortunately had to DNF about partway through. Went, showered, rested, and then came out and swept 20 or 30 miles with Will and I.
That's awesome.
Tried to catch up on beers, but...
Hey, guys, thanks for your time. This has been a real fun discussion.
Yeah.
And best of luck with Tour de France. It's super, super exciting. I hope, fingers crossed. I hope they see what service you can provide and the intent that you're looking to do it. And obviously, no beer, probably more espresso involved in that one, because that's, the thing that they might prefer. Who knows? But you guys are well equipped to go out there and serve well.
Yeah, appreciate your time, guys.
Oh, yeah,
it's been really fun chatting.
We'll do it again sometime, and I look forward to seeing for anything, just seeing what Will's shirt's going to be. they have a cool have a cool yellow Tour de France shirt, and I think you could, and they have thousands of them because so many runners. You might be able to pick up some of those, maybe even cheap, because they might do an overproduction or something, and. And to that point, Richard, I mean, Candace has all of these shirts, right, that she orders for races. I think that you have a natural spot just to kind of tap into overproduction on races. I don't think you need to have me solve your shirt problem, because you don't need 13.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking, I really like... I like my Moab 240 shirt, and if Will isn't using the one that you got that year, can I grab yours, Will?
and I have that same one. I'll give you mine. I mean, for the right cost.
We're getting close already.
All right, guys. Hey, I think a fun podcast. I really appreciate it. Will, it's nice to meet you. I look forward to running with you sometime out there. And Richard, best of luck to you and your new baby. And it's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, appreciate it.
And I think it's ridiculous that you said, "This is Richard Kresser. You might remember me from Richard." Of course, there you'll always have a spot in my address book in my mind. So. You're a good man. Thanks.